you're paying to paper over, look the other way when our so-called partners in the Middle East carry out atrocities of their own.
Before we go, and we're going to do a part two with you, Sarah, and we're going to put it online at democracynow.org, if you can talk about the lawsuit you're involved with and what it means to Mohammed bin Salman.
Well, our lawsuit is a lawsuit that my organization, Dawn, is bringing together with Khadija Cengiz here in U.S. District Court for the murder of Mohammed bin Salman, the damage he's caused Khadija in doing that, as well as the damage to our organization.
The murder of Khashoggi.
Yes. Mohammed bin Salman has tried to dismiss the complaint, but now he continues to seek that President Biden exempt him under the principles of sovereign immunity, even though the Biden administration has said repeatedly that he is not head of state and therefore under U.S. laws wouldn't be entitled to sovereign immunity. Mohammed bin Salman is now demanding that the U.S. intervene in the American judiciary to block our lawsuit.
And we have 10 seconds.
Mohammed bin Salman in exchange for increasing oil production. It's a shocking effort to intervene in our judicial system.
And we're going to talk more about this. People check it out at democracynow.org. Sarah Lee Whitson, Executive Director of Democracy for the Arab World Now, or Dawn. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
Tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programmings of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website, kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Governance and Policy Committee meets quarterly on the third Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify that a meeting is being held.
Hey, bluegrass lovers. Tune in Saturday, March 19th for 8 hours of homespun bluegrass for this year's Bluegrass Marathon. Hear from all your favorite music from the True Vine DJs as they play for you home-recorded sets from your friends and neighbors. Again, that's the Bluegrass Marathon, Saturday, March 19th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on KBOO. See you there.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News. Oregon's rental assistance program is extended an additional week. A jury awards more than $100 million to victims of the Seattle crane collapse. And in international news, nearly 3 million people have fled Ukraine as Russia's assault increasingly threatens Kyiv. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, March 15th, 2022. I'm Yasmin Kobanoglu. Oregon's rental assistance program has been extended by 1 week to March 22nd. Following a late influx of federal funding, the state will continue accepting applications to its emergency rental assistance program for an additional week. The Oregon Emergency Rental Assistance Program was originally scheduled to shut down on midnight, March 14th. It will now remain open to new applications through midnight on March 22nd. The U.S. Department of Treasury gave the state $16 million late Monday to keep the program open an extra week. Currently, renters in Oregon are protected from eviction due to non-payment of rent if they have proof of applying for rental assistance. tenants can still be protected from eviction until September of 2022 if they have a rental assistance application pending with any entity in the state. The state's emergency program has been the main source of rental assistance during the pandemic, but other nonprofits and community organizations have also offered rental aid. The state's program alone has paid out $302 million in rental assistance to almost 42,000 households over the past 9 months. Oregon's interim director of housing stabilization, Jill Smith, said that the additional $16 million will help keep an estimated 2,200 households reliably housed. A former prison nurse has pleaded not guilty to charges of sexually assaulting 12 female inmates while working at the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility in Wilsonville, Oregon. Coffee Creek is the state's only women's prison. The U.S. Department of Justice unsealed the indictment on Monday that charges 37-year-old Tony Daniel Klein of Clackamas County with 21 counts of depriving the women of their constitutional right to not be subjected to cruel and unusual punishment by sexually assaulting them. Klein was also charged with 4 counts of perjury. The indictment alleges that in 2016 and 2017, Klein sexually assaulted 12 inmates, with some assaults resulting in injuries. 4 of the alleged assaults included aggravated sexual abuse. Klein appeared in court via video and pleaded not guilty to all charges. He was granted pretrial release, and a trial date was set for May 16th. Jennifer Black, a Department of Corrections spokesperson, said at least 27 women have brought allegations against Klein since 2019. Federal court records also show Klein was named as a defendant alongside other Department of Corrections employees in 13 lawsuits filed between January of 2019 and May of 2021. Records show that 2 of those lawsuits were dismissed and the rest were settled out of court. Klein worked for the state prison system from October of 2010 through January of 2018 when he resigned. He is now currently on leave from his job as a registered nurse for Legacy Health. According to the Oregon State Board of Nursing, Klein's nursing license remains active. If convicted, Klein faces a maximum sentence of life in prison. A jury on Monday awarded more than $100 million to some of the victims of a tower crane collapse that killed 4 people in Seattle, Washington in 2019. Workers were disassembling the 300-foot crane in strong winds when it fell from the roof of a Google building under construction in the South Lake Union neighborhood. 2 iron workers fell to their deaths, and the crane crushed cars below, killing 2 additional people. The jury's verdict on Monday concerned cases brought by the families of Sarah Pantip Wong, a 19-year-old Seattle Pacific University student, and Alan Justad, a 71-year-old former city worker, who were both killed by the falling crane, as well as 3 others who were injured or had their vehicles struck by the crane. The families of the iron workers who died, 33-year-old Travis Corbett and 31-year-old Andrew Yoder, have filed separate lawsuits. Investigators found that some of the companies involved had cut corners by failing to review the crane's disassembly instructions and prematurely removing large pins securing sections of the crane's mast, a procedure that was commonly done in the industry to save time. The jury determined that the 3 companies involved, Omega Morgan, Northwest Tower Crane Service, and Morrow Equipment Company, had caused $150 million in damages. Attorneys for the plaintiffs credited Northwest Tower Crane and Morrow for acknowledging some responsibility and changing practices in response to the tragedy. Attorneys added that Omega Morgan consistently denied it was to blame, which forced the case to go to trial rather than settle. Today is Equal Pay Day, which highlights the lingering wage gap between men and women in the U.S. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
Today is Equal Pay Day, representing how far into 2022 women would have to work to make what men did in 2021, on average. In 2021, full-time wages for women were about 83% that of full-time men. In Washington State, the gap was wider, at about 78%, or $15,000 less per year. Marilyn Watkins with Economic Opportunity Institute says women held just 22% of the state's technology jobs, the highest paying profession in the state. She also notes that the pay gap is greater when race is included.
For Black women, Latino women, Indigenous women, the pay gap is significantly worse than it is overall for white and most Asian women.
In 2021, Black and Latino women made about 63 and 58% respectively of what men made nationally. Watkins notes that while the pay gap for women overall is wider in Washington, wages are higher across the board compared with other states. Watkins says a combination of factors contribute to the wage gap, including unequal treatment in the workplace. Another issue is pay transparency. She says lawmakers passed a measure this year that will require employers to disclose salaries for an open position at the start of the hiring process.
That kind of transparency just gives everybody more access to information and helps give workers a little bit more power in the negotiating process, and also makes it much more difficult for those kinds of unconscious biases to come into play in terms of the starting wage that someone is offered.
Another factor is the cost of, and often responsibility for, child care. Watkins says most children grow up in a household with a mother, whether it's a single mom or a two-person household, and the fact that women have lower earnings impacts those children.
If we could eliminate the gender wage gap, and if we could eliminate especially that gender plus race wage gap, it would really make a dent in childhood poverty in this country.
Watkins says major investments in child care could go a long way in tackling this issue. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
The Idaho legislature on Monday approved a bill to ban abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. The bill is similar to a Texas law that is the most restrictive abortion legislation in the country. The Idaho State House passed the Republican-backed measure on Monday after the state Senate passed it earlier this month. The bill was inspired by the Texas law that allows private citizens to sue abortion providers or others who help women get abortions after fetal cardiac activity has been detected. However, there are some differences between the Idaho bill and the Texas law. The Idaho measure is narrower. It would allow only the potential father, grandparents, siblings, aunts, and uncles to sue an abortion provider for a minimum of $20,000 within 4 years of an abortion. The Texas law allows any citizen to file a lawsuit with the possibility of being awarded $10,000 by a court. In addition, unlike the Texas law, the Idaho bill has exceptions for rape and incest. Opponents of the legislation argue it's unconstitutional and note that 6 weeks is before many women even know that they're pregnant. Jennifer Allen, the CEO of Planned Parenthood Alliance Advocates, a nonprofit group working in Idaho, urged Governor Brad Little to veto the measure. Allen said, quote, "Governor Little must do the right thing, listen to the medical community, and veto this legislation before it forces Idaho patients to leave the state for critical, time-sensitive care or remain pregnant against their will," end quote. Republican lawmakers in several states have introduced legislation modeled on the Texas law. The Idaho bill is the first to make it through a state legislature. The U.S. Supreme Court let the Texas law go into effect last year, allowing only a narrow challenge to proceed. The Texas Supreme Court ruled against abortion clinics on that issue last week, essentially allowing the law to remain in place pending further legal challenges. The Supreme Court is also weighing whether to uphold a Mississippi law that would ban almost all abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. It's considered the most direct challenge to Roe v. Wade in nearly three decades. Russia's assault on Ukraine is increasingly threatening the capital of Kyiv as the war enters its 21st day. The humanitarian crisis has forced nearly 3 million people to flee the country. Kyiv imposed a 35-hour curfew starting Tuesday as its mayor warned that the city faced a dangerous moment. At a news conference Tuesday at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., the Ukrainian ambassador to the U.S., Oksana Markarova, called Russia's invasion of Ukraine a, quote, "clear case of genocide," end quote. Markarova also called for more international support for her home country in the form of weapons, increased sanctions, and diplomatic pressure for humanitarian aid corridors. She thanked supporting countries for their assistance and emphasized Ukraine's intent to keep resisting. The leaders of three European countries, the Czech Republic, Poland, and Slovenia, traveled to Kyiv to meet with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in a bold show of support. This comes as the European Union targeted Russia with a new set of sanctions on Tuesday, banning investments in the Russian energy sector and transactions with its military-industrial complex. The EU is also instituting an export ban on luxury goods, such as cars and jewelry, and broadened its list of sanctioned persons to include more oligarchs and business entities linked to the Kremlin. The White House said Tuesday that President Joe Biden would travel to Belgium later this month to attend a NATO summit on the conflict. Zelensky will address Congress on Wednesday as the war on his country intensifies. The speech will be live-streamed for the public. Several senators said Tuesday that they expect Zelensky to ask the U.S. for more assistance in the virtual address. Also on Tuesday, Russia formally exited the Council of Europe, an organization that strives to uphold human rights on the continent. The council had previously moved to suspend Russia from the 47-nation organization. The State Department announced Tuesday that the U.S. is sanctioning the president of Belarus, Alexander Lukashenko, and his family to hold them accountable for the government's human rights abuses and violations. Belarus has played a key role, as using its border has been strategically advantageous to Russia because Belarus's border with Ukraine is much closer to Kyiv than Russia's, providing a shorter pathway for Russian troops to reach the Ukrainian capital. The Russian Foreign Ministry said Tuesday that President Biden and other top U.S. officials have been added to the Russian sanctions list. The move comes in response to the economic sanctions against Russian President Vladimir Putin's government, as well as Russian oligarchs and banks. Russia's ties to the global economy are rapidly unwinding as crushing sanctions and the Kremlin's response upend decades of post-Soviet reforms. Experts say the fallout could last long after the war in Ukraine ends and tarnished Russia's standing for decades. A new report shows that large oil and gas companies are making billions in profits from recent spikes in gas prices. Eric Galatis has more on the story.
A new Accountable.us report suggests that the fossil fuel industry is misleading the American public on the cause of rising gas prices. Kyle Herrig, the group's president, says as oil and gas companies point fingers at the Biden administration, they continue to rake in profits and raise prices on consumers. He points to soaring windfalls gained by industry giants British Petroleum, Chevron, ExxonMobil, and Shell.
Combined, the four companies posted nearly $25 billion in quarter four of 2021, bringing their total profits last year to over $75 billion.
Herrig notes that instead of offering relief at the pump, oil companies have used profits for stock buybacks and shareholder dividends. The American Petroleum Institute and others are calling on President Joe Biden to increase domestic production by relaxing regulations and opening up new oil and gas leases on public lands. Congressman Raul Grijalva, an Arizona Democrat, says the fossil fuel industry is just recycling old talking points about how more drilling and fewer regulations will bring down gas prices. He says oil and gas companies are already sitting on 26 million acres of leases and 53% are not producing.
These same companies already have over 9,000 approved permits they can use whenever they want. And the very companies with thousands of acres of existing leases and hundreds of unused permits are the same ones shouting that they need more land for drilling.
Herrig believes the current crisis in Ukraine is an important reminder that a fossil fuel-based economy is too unpredictable and makes Americans dependent on the decisions of oil companies and hostile foreign leaders like Putin.
We must invest in our future and secure real energy independence by speeding up the production of cheaper, cleaner energy here at home so we aren't impacted by foreign supply chain disruptions or conflicts overseas.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Making Contact. Then at 6, it's Transpositive PDX. And at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with a low of 43 degrees. Tomorrow will again be partly cloudy with a high of 56 degrees. Today in history, in 2019, a gunman attacks 2 different mosques in Christchurch, New Zealand during Friday prayer, killing 51 people and wounding 40. the assailant, an Australian with ties to the racist and xenophobic identitarian movement, fled but was captured less than half an hour after he began his attack. The incident was the first mass shooting in New Zealand since 1997. The next month, the government passed a law banning semi-automatic weapons and their components, and instituting a buyback period for weapons that would become illegal. By the end of the year, the government had received over 56,000 guns and almost 200,000 gun parts. The quote of the day is from the Prime Minister of New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern, who is the world's youngest female head of government. Ardern said, quote, "To me, leadership is not about necessarily being the loudest in the room, but instead being the bridge, or the thing that is missing in the discussion, and trying to build a consensus from there." End quote. The UN Secretary General raises the alarm over the prospect of a nuclear conflict, and a Biden Federal Reserve nominee hits a roadblock with Senator Joe Manchin. With more on the story, it's Mary Sherman with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Raising the alert of Russian nuclear forces is a bone-chilling development. The prospect of nuclear conflict, once unthinkable, is now back within the realm of possibility.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres pleaded for Russia to cease violence against Ukraine and get on a path to diplomacy and peace. He said the situation is deteriorating as roads, airports, and health facilities lie in ruins and thousands are without water or electricity. The European Union approved a fourth set of sanctions to punish Moscow Monday, along with more sectors of the Russian economy. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky will speak virtually to members of Congress Wednesday after lawmakers approved a $14 billion aid package for his country. Zelensky has pushed the U.S. to implement a no-fly zone, but defense officials fear it would result in a direct U.S.-Russia conflict. Fox News correspondent Benjamin Hall was injured reporting on the Ukraine invasion and is hospitalized. While few details are known, Pentagon spokesman John Kirby expressed hope for a speedy recovery.
This is a war that didn't need to be fought, to be sure. But just as to be sure, there are journalists from around the world on the ground trying to discover the truth and to show that truth and to tell these important stories.
The White House is considering a trip for President Biden to Europe so that he can meet with allies about the invasion. A possible destination would be Brussels, home of NATO headquarters. On Monday, Biden told a National League of Cities conference his administration is not behind record inflation and rising costs, which he attributed to the pandemic and Russia.
Make no mistake, the current spike in gas prices is largely the fault of Vladimir Putin. It has nothing to do with the American Rescue Plan.
Republicans have called on Biden to lift executive orders, canceling the Keystone XL pipeline and freezing new oil and gas leases on federal land. Senator Joe Manchin says he won't vote to confirm Sarah Bloom Raskin as the Fed's vice chair for supervision. The West Virginia Democrat voiced concerns about her view that the Fed should exclude struggling energy companies from government relief. Federal prosecutors asked a judge to dismiss criminal charges against a Capitol riot defendant and release him from jail, admitting in a court filing his legal right to a speedy trial has been violated. Prosecutors said oversights led to the defendant sitting in a Virginia jail for weeks as he awaited a court appearance. And this is Sunshine Week, which celebrates the importance of government transparency. Associate Attorney General Vinita Gupta says new guidelines will soon be issued to encourage government-wide compliance with the Freedom of Information Act.
It is through the FOIA that journalists, advocates, and the public remain informed well enough to make real our ideal of a democracy governed by the people and for the people.
In 2021, the federal government processed more than 838,000 FOIA requests. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eTrust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Shrinking glaciers and declining snowpack are reducing the flow of meltwater into Montana's rivers and streams. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Fly fishing guide Hillary Hutchison grew up fishing and rafting in northern Montana in the cold mountain rivers and streams near Glacier National Park.
It's this wonderful place full of a lot of great water.
But as the climate warms, shrinking glaciers and declining snowpack are reducing the flow of meltwater into those rivers and streams. About 50 years ago, there were 35 named glaciers in the national park. When Hutchison started her career in the 90s, about 30 glaciers remained.
And now the USGS is saying about 24. So significant change over the time that I've been guiding, and kind of a weird thing to be able to watch and see happen in front of your own eyes.
With fewer glaciers providing meltwater, rivers and streams are getting shallower and warmer. Hutchison says that could threaten fish habitat and hurt the state's multi-billion dollar outdoor recreation industry. So to help protect Western rivers, Hutchison has testified to Congress about the changes she's seeing. And she works to raise awareness among her clients and the public about how human-caused warming is transforming the region that she grew up in and that so many love. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Russia's assault on Ukraine has increasingly threatened its capital of Kyiv. Deadly strikes have hit residential areas, underscoring a dire humanitarian crisis that has forced nearly 3 million people to flee the country. Now we go to global citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
We might be inclined to think that the most urgent decisions on Ukraine have been made. Decisions on military aid to the Ukraine government, on humanitarian aid to refugees and Ukrainian civilians still in the country, and on support of NATO countries bordering Russia. But to think so would be mistaken. As the military and humanitarian situation in Ukraine deteriorates, Thomas Friedman writes for the New York Times, quote, "It will become more and more obvious that our biggest problem with Putin in Ukraine is that he will refuse to lose early and small, and the only other outcome is that he will lose big and late. Putin can't stand to lose, which means a preference for total destruction of Ukraine rather than a settlement. More devastation will confront the U.S. and NATO with frightening choices. Here are some that come to mind. First, as Ukraine cities burn in the wake of Russian targeting of civilian structures, we will face another Grozny or Aleppo, that is, utter destruction by a military machine that is impervious to reason. Will the West simply stand by helplessly as Kyiv is reduced to rubble? Second, the humanitarian disaster will reach appalling proportions. Food, fuel, housing, and water will be unavailable to large parts of the Ukraine population. Look at Mariupol. It may become the norm for trapped populations. Will the West be willing and able to deliver assistance in defiance of the Russians? Can Eastern Europe absorb the millions more people who are trying to get out of Ukraine? Third, continued Ukraine resistance will be heroic, but very costly in casualties. If we witness Russian forces committing atrocities, killing captured soldiers, and otherwise violating the laws of war, will the West do anything to rescue resistance fighters? Fourth, should a Ukraine insurgency make headway with support from outside Ukraine, it is conceivable that Russia will detonate a so-called tactical nuclear weapon or use a chemical or biological weapon to inspire fear and promote surrender. How, if at all, will the West respond? Fifth, Ukraine's leadership might be captured and killed, confined outside the country, or put on trial. Can that valiant leadership be saved? Sixth, Russian fire might be directed, by accident or design, at NATO forces that are providing military aid from within Poland or the Baltic states. Will NATO respond to such attacks? Seventh, another Ukraine nuclear power plant might be taken over by the Russians, only this time creating radiation leakage. Will there be a response to such an event? The world community will be shocked and outraged by events like these. But shock and outrage have happened many times before, yet rarely have they led to a strong, unified response. The challenge for NATO is that up to now, the Russians have controlled the rules of engagement. NATO is constantly searching for low-risk counteraction, for now rejecting options such as sending Soviet-era fighter jets to Ukraine, establishing a total or limited no-fly zone, or creating an escape corridor for refugees. But as the Ukraine situation moves from dire to catastrophic, political pressure in the U.S. and Europe is likely to mount for taking the gloves off, challenging Putin to respond to high-risk NATO initiatives. The argument that we must let sanctions on Russia take full effect and rely in the meantime on Ukraine's guerrilla resistance is likely to weaken as the tragedy unfolds on TV and in social media. There are no easy answers here. sitting by while a country is destroyed vitiates the UN Charter, Europe's security, and NATO's reason for being, whereas taking forceful action may lead to a conflict involving weapons of mass destruction and the commitment of NATO armies. Either way, we can't avoid confronting worst-case scenarios of the kind I've outlined. As two writers conclude in the journal Foreign Affairs, quote, "The West and Russia may now be entering into the terminal stages of an insecurity spiral, a series of mutually destabilizing choices which could end in tragedy, producing a larger European conflagration, even if it doesn't go nuclear. We're at a perilous moment. The administration has to make decisions and invite public debate on how or whether to save Ukraine." I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thank you very much for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, March 15th, 2022. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertow, the producer is Yasmin Kobanoglu, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Jonah Chester, Eric Galatis, Mary Sherman, Eric Tegadoff, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Yasmin Kobanoglu. All of these KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Making Contact.
I'm Salima Hamarani, and on today's Making Contact,
it's a date with destiny tonight, a race that could make history.